WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It is November. We must be in first place. And the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. This guy joined me the last time we did it. We were over at the Drug City in the fountain upstairs there in the tasting room. Luke Jones going to talk some football with us, but I want to remind everybody the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'm going to be giving away Raven Scratch-Off's Lucky Batch. We're going to be at Fadley's, why I'm wearing the Fadley shirt. They were established in 1887, but here in 2023, they're still in the old Lexington market. We're going to be there on Friday morning from 9 until noon. At some point, I'll have some guests for that. Also, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road, all sorts of places. Costas in Dundalk next Tuesday the 14th. Going to be at Pappas in Parkville. That's not Hunt Valley. That's not Glen Burnie. That's not Bel Air. That's Parkville, the original location, on the 21st. We'll be at Coco's in Lauraville on the 29th. Gertrude's at the BMA in the Museum of Art down by Hopkins on the 30th. We're going to be at Hollywood Casino in Perryville on the 1st of December from 2 until 5, and then State Fair on the 5th of December in the morning. So really taking a tour of all the people who keep us in business, help us feed our families. Luke Jones has been with us for 15 years, and he was out at the stadium. He was in the locker room after the game, fishing the sound out. They don't let me go anymore. You guys know that. But Luke was there working hard. Luke, I think we've seen a lot of things. I don't know that we've seen anything quite as impressive as the last 2 hours of football in the stadium, notwithstanding Arizona and West Coast, and they won, and it's fine. But where the team sits right now, we're starting to discuss 2006. We're starting to discuss 2019 and the better efforts. And when Tony Romo and Jim Nantz come to town and spend 3 hours talking about hosting AFC championship games and really, really speedboat the Lions and now the Seahawks, who look to be pretty decent teams in the NFC, Cleveland and Cincinnati are on their way in. I'm not anointing anybody anything. There's a lot of football to be played. We saw Deshaun Watson. We've seen Joe Burrow come back to life. The Steelers never look like they come back to life, but all they do is win. this was impressive. Impressive in a way when I wrote Purple Rain 1, when they beat Troy Aikman up. Well, you know, like this defense, and we're going to talk Lamar and OBJ and Keaton Mitchell and his pops coming on this week, Anthony Mitchell. But the defense and the overall body of the work, it stands as very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've grown accustomed, Nestor, in recent years to labeling good defenses in the modern NFL as what? Good for today's NFL, right? You hear that all the time, and we've said that a number of times in recent years because we just know how the league has worked, how it's trended over the last 10 years or so. But I think when you look at what this defense has done statistically, and I get it, earlier in the year, they weren't exactly facing a murderer's row of offenses, of quarterbacks. You know, we talked about Joe Burrow back in week two and how he wasn't right early on. But you look back over the last 3 weeks, Jared Goff 2 weeks ago was coming into Baltimore looking like a top five quarterback, at least at that point in the season, and had played well the previous year, was a Pro Bowl quarterback in the NFC for whatever a Pro Bowl selection is worth.
So it was Tyler Huntley, apparently, right?
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure we know that.
Jared Goff, way more legitimate than Tyler Huntley in that capacity. But then you talk about the Seattle Seahawks and Geno Smith. And let's be very clear, even before Sunday's game, Geno Smith's not playing at the level that he did last year, which was fantastic story, was voted comeback player of the year, made the Pro Bowl. Great story, especially on the heels of the Seahawks trading Russell Wilson. But you know, still a capable, solid quarterback. This isn't some rookie, some backup that you've never heard of starting a game. And the Ravens have not only beaten the Lions and the Seahawks, as you mentioned, but they've beaten them by a 75-9 margin. Very impressive on the offensive side of the ball, as you said, and we'll get to that. But when you start to look at what this defense is doing statistically, when you look at what they're doing at every level, when you start to think about it and say, okay, who on the defense, you know, forget about the guys that are doing great because we'll talk about them, but who would you say on the defense is really having a down year? And I think when you start to think about it, there aren't many names that come to mind. I mean, I think maybe guys aren't having their best season like Marlon Humphrey, but he's hardly been a problem or bad or anything like that. So
we don't sit here week after week and talk about missed tackles. We don't talk about recurring penalties in the secondary. We don't talk about Defensive holding penalties. We don't talk about pointing our finger at one guy because repeated flags, repeatedly getting beat, repeatedly maybe even getting picked on, right? Because like Humphrey has been targeted less than anybody in the league, which means the other side's getting picked on.
Yeah, Brandon Stevens, who, as we remember, was playing safety at the start of training camp and moved a corner out of necessity because they had so many injuries way back when we all thought that, oh, this team doesn't have enough cornerback depth. But you just look at the numbers, Nestor. They're allowing 13.8 points per game. Best in the NFL. We know that. But as it stands right now, and we get it, it's early November. As you pointed out, no one's crowned right now. We don't know what this team's going to do the rest of the season. And we do know that it is an imposing schedule. It's going to be a more challenging second half than it was in the first half.
Even and if with this all defense
the travel,
holds up,
accounted for.
If the defense holds up the way like it looked in the first half, because I will give you, they played some really crappy quarterback. They haven't played a great quarterback, Burrow aside, and he wasn't right. They haven't played anybody great. I really did start to look down, and I'm like, you're going to see six real quarterbacks in the next 8 weeks, like six real quarterbacks, six quarterbacks that are at least as good as Goff, right?
Well, they've seen two good quarterbacks in the last 3 weeks, or at least much better than they had faced. But 13.8 points per contest allowed, that right now stands to be, at least on a pace. And again, we have the rest of the season to go, but it's third in franchise history behind, of course, the 2000 Ravens. And then the 2006 team that was 13-3 and had six players go to the Pro Bowl. So let's keep in mind, this is a different era of the NFL than 2000 or 2006. So for them to be there statistically, sacks, they lead the NFL. They're on pace to break the 2006 team's franchise record for sacks, even if you just account for 16 games rather than 17. Justin Madubuike on pace to be the first double-digit sacks defender for the Ravens since Terrell Suggs 6 years ago. And Geno Stone, another interception, another week, and he leads the NFL, and he's on a pace now to have the best interception season for a Ravens player since going all the way back to Ed Reed. When you're mentioning defenses of that caliber in the history of this franchise, and you're mentioning players of that ilk, talking about a Hall of Famer, or in the case of Terrell Suggs, a future Hall of Famer, you're doing some pretty special things. And I think it's worth pointing out, Nestor, and we've talked about this a little bit in passing, but scoring is down a little bit in the NFL from where it's been over the last 10 years ago. So I think that's a small part of this, sure, but this is a defense that is playing at a very high level. And it's what I said a few minutes ago, not just, oh, good for today's NFL. It's been superb. And no disrespect meant to the Cleveland Browns, who look, shut out a quarterback who I can't even remember his name from Sunday, for Arizona, considering they just traded Josh Dobbs. But this has been a really, really impressive defense through the first nine games of the season. And we'll see how it's going to play out. Yeah, they're going to play some tougher opponents. And we're going to start thinking more and more about January when you're talking about a team that's 7-2 for the first time since 2019. But this is a defense that is scary and looking more and more formidable, more and more intimidating. And for them to do what they've done two of the last 3 weeks, where that's taking an NFC division leader in two of the last three games and not just beating them, but embarrassing them. I mean, they made Jared Goff look helpless. Geno Smith looked confused throughout the day on Sunday. It was really, really impressive. So then when you couple that with an offense that runs for almost 300 yards, you've got something there. You're talking about, at this point, a very legitimate, dangerous Super Bowl contender, if not the favorite at this point. And I'm not ready to go that far because you still talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. At least I'm going to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs with the proper amount of respect with what they've done. But I'm looking around the NFL right now, Nestor, and in early November, for whatever that's worth, which isn't much in the big picture, I'm not seeing the team that's better than the Baltimore Ravens right now.
Well, you share that with Tony Romo. Luke Jones is here. He is Baltimore Luke. You can find him out on the interwebs. By the way, Clayton Tune. Clayton Tune, T-U-N-E, was the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. So when you see the gaudy stats this week for the Cleveland Browns, they won 27-0, you'll see that they beat Clayton Tune. By the way, I can't remember the Browns quarterback's name that we saw who played for them 6 weeks ago either. It'll be Deshaun Watson this week. Before we can even think about this week and what Sunday and Thursday of next week represents, and certainly where the Bengals have come from, let's stay focused on this defense. And you can read my column this, and of course, Luke's work up at BaltimorePositive.com as well. For the defense and where DaCosta put pieces together, because you go out there in March and April, and we do the Liars Luncheon, and we used to go out to Indianapolis. It was draft, and oh my God, the salary cap, and oh my God, Lamar's 20% of the cap, and where are they going to come up with money? It is amazing that Belichick in this century sort of unearthed this concept of bringing veteran players in who need a gig, who wanted too much money elsewhere, who, when you're a good organization, you can recruit players to come and play for you, who may play for less money. The pass rush role, when we talk about underpaid players, they get all of this money on the free agent market, whether there's Za'Darius Smith or Matthew Judon. But once you get to be 30 and you're in that case, whether it was Pernell McPhee a couple of years ago, I mean, we can go through all of the names of all of these sort of washed out, bad need. McCrary never got there. Bulware never got there. They just ended, right? But the guys that can get after the quarterback when you can still do it a little bit. And, you know, Kyle Van Noy comes in and two Super Bowls kind of quietly under radar. Can he still do it? Nobody wanted him. You know, last guy standing kind of thing. That hasn't always been the case when you're getting Doomerville. And, you know, I guess Jadeveon Clowney would have had a job somewhere else in the way that Calais Campbell got a job this year. But it is amazing how maligned that role is and how significant it can become that a pro personnel director and a general manager can go out and really improve a football team by being wily with veterans. I mean, Clowney's not sneaking up on anybody. He was a 1-1. But the question is always, gas in the tire, what do they have left? And that goes for pitching, whether it's Scherzer or whether it's Kyle Gibson or whether it's, you know, whoever the 30-something guy that you're trying to resurrect yourself with every fifth day in baseball. But the pass rush thing, when you can get a Dwight Freeney late in his career or Chad Brown, and I'm just naming names of great, great players. Suggs with the Chiefs, you already mentioned him, that – I don't know. That doesn't show up anywhere in April or May or June or July. It's not a sexy thing. They brought in another body. What they were really counting on was Owe and Ojabo, and that's what they drafted for. But then what really happens when the game takes over is the guys who know how to do this and Chuck Smith coaching them up, that's really the difference maker. Because you can stop the run, but if you can't stop the pass and you can't get to the quarterback against these bad quarterbacks the first half of the year, that's one thing. But I hold out some hope that they're going to be able to beat Orlando Brown and get after Joe Burrow. I hold out some hope that they're going to make Deshaun Watson look like he's been kind of on the pine for a year and a half or 2 years and hasn't really looked great at any point. I don't expect him to look great. But the pass rush and getting after the quarterback, it's the reason Suggs is a lottery pick. It's the reason that you're always looking for that Watt, that difference maker player. But to be able to find it in free agency, even if it's 10, 12, 14, 18 snaps a game, that's a real thing. And that's something that only teams like the Ravens can do, because these jobs aren't attractive to all of those guys. Those guys don't want to go play for the Raiders and do this at the end of their career. They want to play somewhere where they can be 7-2.
Yeah, it certainly helps. And we know how much pass rush is still valued around the league. I mean, just look at what the Chicago Bears did this past week. In a season they're doing nothing, a season they're going nowhere, they trade for Montez Sweat, give up a second-round pick, which is going to be very close to a first-round pick. So you understand why Washington did it. And then they turn around and give Sweat the deal they did. And go look at his career numbers. Don't get me wrong, he's a really good player, but is he a 20 sack, 18 sack per season kind of pass rusher? He's not. So
you're going to build your defense around him. The Ravens decided they were going to build their defense around Roquan Smith before they met him. Literally, right?
Sure. Well, and that's not to say that the Ravens don't value those players, because the Ravens have, they've brought in Elvis Dumervil. You know, they tried to sign Za'Darius Smith. You know, they've drafted Adafe Owe in the first round, who, by the way,
traded for Ngakoue, right? Yeah.
Who, by the way, you know, Adafe Owe quietly, because he's missed time with the ankle, when he's been on the field, he's been really good. I mean, go check out the spin move and sack he had on Sunday. So they're even having some of that, and they still have the upside with him and Ajabo, who's still expected to be back. But yeah, when you bring in someone like a Jadeveon Clowney, when you bring in a Kyle Van Noy, who they talked to during training camp, but the reality was he hasn't really even minced words about this. He wasn't in a major rush to come into training camp in late July or August 3rd. He's a vet. He's been around. He knows what he needs to get ready for the season in the way that a 24-year-old doesn't necessarily, but he wanted more money. The Ravens didn't want to give him that money at that point in time. They reconvene, you know, a month and a half later, or whatever it ended up being, and you find a price point that makes sense for both sides. You know, you add in some incentives or whatever you try to do, you know, as the case of what they did with Clowney as well. So you bring in vets. You have a system that you really buy into, and we're going to continue to talk about Mike McDonald as a head coach candidate. I mean, you're not going to be able to hide him the way this defense is playing, but I'm glad you mentioned Chuck Smith, who has been talked about not just by the outside linebackers who are the players that he coaches by title, but it's more than that. You know, he's worked with Justin Madubuike. He's worked with Michael Pierce. So it's not just the edge guys. It's your interior defensive line. It's your, you know, your nickels or your inside linebackers when they're blitzing. So it's really been a full-blown ensemble effort. But as you pointed out, those veteran players that you can bring in at a value, you know, at a bargain compared to what you're going to pay a pass rusher at the age of 27, 26, it's really worked out well for them. And it hasn't been a home run every single time. You know, you mentioned Yannick Ngakoue. Jason Pierre-Paul was solid for them last year, but he didn't move the needle from a pass rushing standpoint. But what they're getting this year, and again, it hasn't just been those edge guys. Look at their roster. Look at their defense, top to bottom. They have 35 sacks, but Madubuike is the one guy that has a gaudy total. The rest of these guys, you look at them, they say, oh, 1.5 sacks, 2 sacks. Hey, he's got 3. You know, Van Noy had 2 on Sunday, back-to-back plays. And to me, what was the turning point of the game, as I talked or asked John Harbaugh about it after the game. But it's just been a really, really impressive collective effort for this defense. And let's be clear, you always need that. I understand that, but the difference is you look back at that Ravens defense 15 years ago, you knew that there were multiple future Hall of Famers on the field. Right now for this defense, you know, certainly some great players. And Roquan Smith, if he does this for another 8 years, probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, right? But that's a long time still. Kyle Van Noy's not a Hall of Fame player. Jadeveon Clowney's not a Hall of Fame player. Marlon Humphrey at this point, I don't think is a Hall of Fame player. So, you know, you talk about that defense from 15 years ago, legendary, right? This defense, it's been really good across the board, really doesn't have a major weakness. You know, I don't even know what I would say their relative weakness is. Okay, they haven't stopped the run at a 2000-like level, but they still are really good against the run. So,
well, they don't miss Calais Campbell. I mean, which is like
they
crazy,
haven't.
Right?
Right, exactly. And it's not as though I thought that they're defensive line was going to be a liability, but Calais Campbell was still playing at a high level last year.
He was their best player last year until Roquan showed up.
On their front, you know, on their front, certainly. But, I mean, it's been an outstanding defensive effort across the board. And, again, I credit coaching. I credit the front office for bringing in depth pieces the way they have. I think you look at, for me, what really jumps out is the 2020 draft. I mean, look at that draft, which was not viewed through the most favorable lens, even a year ago, year and a half, 2 years ago, certainly. But you have Patrick Queen, who's on his way to making some money, most likely not in Baltimore. But Justin Madubuike continues to ring the cash register every single week. I mean, he's got at least a half sack in 6 straight games now. You have Broderick Washington, who's already been paid, Malik Harrison, who's been a depth piece for them, Geno Stone, who's not just a great story for the Ravens, one of the best stories in the NFL this year. I mean, the guy's leading the league in interceptions, and he's a backup I mean, think about that. I mean, they haven't had Marcus Williams, who is not a bad player by any stretch of the imagination. He's played quite well when he's been on the field. But you know, that's a $70 million contract you invested who hasn't been on the field. And yet they haven't missed a beat because their backup has played at a Pro Bowl level. So it really it really feels like an embarrassment of riches, even at some spots where, you know, 2 months ago, we were talking about concerns at corner. Fast forward to now.
Look at that, Chuck Clark got out of here, right? I mean, you know, the guy was wearing the helmet, is gone, and Calais Campbell gone. I mean, they've heart transplanted this defense. They really have. I mean, Roquan Smith wasn't here 18 games ago, right? So, like, it really is amazing that we're talking about it in this way, because nobody talked about this in the offseason. I did a little bit in August. I thought the defense would be the better side of the ball. I said that. Once we got into June and July, I felt like the defense was quietly going to be better than advertised. And I don't know that I could sit here and say that I thought we'd be talking about them doing special things in November.
Yeah. I mean, you were right on that. But I would also say, to the point that you just made, if I had told you back in July that Brandon Stevens would be a starting corner for them, if I had told you that David Ajabo would barely play, if I would have told you that Adafe Owe would have missed more games that he's played into this point, or at least parts of games, you know, if you count those, you would have said, wow, I have concerns about corner, which we did back in July, and especially in August because they were so banged up, and concerns about the pass rush, which we were talking about that throughout the offseason. And yet you see how it's played out. You know, they're anticipated strengths have been strengths, and areas that there were concerns about have also been strengths. I mean, think about it. Rock Ya-Sin was signed right after the draft to be the starting outside corner opposite Marlon Humphrey. He's not even playing. Ronald Darby was signed in late August as a guy that, you know, with Humphrey missing the first quarter of the season with the foot surgery, was expected to be playing a lot. He's not even playing. You know, Brandon Stevens has played so well transitioning from safety to corner that he's earned that job permanently, or at least for the foreseeable future, until he potentially struggles at some point or gets hurt or whatever. You never know, but they've just had so many guys step up. And, you know, to your point, you know, Calais Campbell moves on. You know, Chuck Clark, they were going to move on from the moment that they drafted Kyle Hamilton. I think we all knew that, but that didn't mean he wasn't an important part of what they did in recent years. So
they kept moving on from Jimmy Smith, but they kept re-signing him and he kept playing, right? I mean, so when you get guys that you like that are your guys in your system, you know, he's a guy that they may sign in week 11 of next year because they like him and they have injuries. They had, you know what I mean? Like they bring guys back. They do. And they bring guys back that know the system and can play the system. Pernell McPhee, I already brought his name up. I mean, once they fall in like with you, they like you. Kyle Van Noy was the guy they would have drafted. They loved him.
Sure. No question. Another guy that falls into that category, Tony Jefferson, was someone they brought back, who, by the way, is now in their front office, or, you know, in the pecking order, but, you know, learning how to be a scout and things of that nature. I saw him sitting in the press box on Sunday. So, you know, it really is so impressive what they are doing, because it's not as though the plan has played out how they would have envisioned it back in April. I mean, if you had said in April, if you told Eric DaCosta, John Harbaugh, Mike McDonald, Chuck Smith, that the defense would be doing what it is right now, they wouldn't have been saying that, oh, Brandon Stevens must be starting opposite Marlon Humphrey. And they wouldn't have been saying, oh, well, Jadeveon Clowney and Kyle Van Noy are leading the way on the edges because, well, Ajabo hasn't been on the field and always been on and off the field. So
Matt Abike is leading the team in sacks and Geno Stone's leading the league in interceptions.
Yeah, they might have thought Matt Abike because, that, I mean, there's been a lot of talk the last couple of years. I mean, if you recall Peter King 2 years ago, you know, named Matt Abike as a dark horse defensive player of the year candidate. And it looked silly at the time, but, you know, you look at it now, I don't know if I'm putting him in that category, but he's certainly going to make himself some money, whether it's going to be in Baltimore or whether he's pricing himself out of Baltimore. But it's just been such an impressive performance. And I'll leave you with this, because I rattled off some of the other statistics. They gave up 6 first downs on Sunday. 6. This isn't 2000. This isn't the 1999 Ravens defense playing in an era where you can crush the quarterback and, you know, you can be handsy with wide receivers down the field and things of that nature. This is 2023, where we know that most of the rules are catered towards the offense. They held the Seattle Seahawks to 6 first downs on Sunday. I mean, that's reminiscent of the Ravens going up against Spurgeon Wynn and the Cleveland Browns back in 2000. So really, really impressive. Yes, they need to keep it going, but I think the most impressive thing coming away from the postgame locker room, Nestor, this defense isn't satisfied yet. You know, you get the sense that they feel like they can be even better. And you add in a healthy version of Ajabo and Owe in that rotation. You add in Marcus Williams, and you can move guys around, and Kyle Hamilton can slide down to the nickel. I mean, they have so – there's more meat on the bone for this defense, and I think that's what's exciting. Understanding, yeah, the competition's going to pick up, especially when you start thinking about January. But, boy, this defense – playing at a very high level. And no, it's not just, well, pretty good for this era. No, it's a darn good defense in any era right now.
Got to stay healthy. Bring them onto the field. Ravens after the Cleveland Browns on Sunday at the stadium. Luke will be in Owings Mills all week long. I am back on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Window Nation, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare. We're going to be at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt. We're going to be at Lexington Market on Friday. And then we are taking the tour out on the road, all sorts of places. Costas next Tuesday, the 14th. Pappas in Parkville on the 21st. Coco's Pub over in Lauraville on the 29th. Gertrude's at the BMA on the 30th. Hollywood Casino in Perryville on December the 1st, and then State Fair in Catonsville on December the 5th. Also doing some stuff with Curio. I did a tour of their grow last week. Just mind-blowing science going on right over here in Timonium. I'll be talking to Wendy Bronfine about that this week. It is our 25th anniversary for all things we do around here. We're counting things down, including your participation in our road trips over the years as we get down to number 22, 21, and 20. You can find all of that and Luke's work up at Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.